As a high school teacher, every day I encounter hungry students. I'm continually surprised at how many students simply do not eat breakfast. And they're hungry. When they're hungry, they're droopy and they're not in a teachable situation. Some students come pleading to me, asking if I have anything for them to eat. And I have a small refrigerator. It's about 30 inches high, and I have a microwave oven on top of it. So there's some evidence that there might be food in the classroom. And over the years, I've stocked in a drawer a few boxes of graham crackers, although not this week. And I have some sleeves of rice cakes, some really cheap, bulky something, in a desk drawer to take care of those emergencies I call the growling stomach syndrome. I discovered that once I feed a hungry student, that the student becomes like a neighborhood stray cat that no one really owns. Once you feed the cat, the stray, then the stray keeps coming back for more food, and at some point the stray cat becomes your cat, and then you wind up feeding it every day. However, I don't have unlimited funds, so I put limits on how much food that a student can get from me. So students then, some elect to bring their own food to school, such as little bags of flavored rice that require heating in a microwave. And of course, that means that they need a bowl or something to put the rice in or whatever else they're bringing. And I feel sorry for the kids, you know, so I lend them my own ceramic bowl that I would put in the microwave or maybe a plate so they can use it. On cold days, some of them bring packages of hot cocoa mix, and they will to make hot chocolate so they can, and then ask, can I borrow one of your ceramic mugs? And of course they, and I have several, so I generally consent, and then they can put my ceramic mug in the microwave, or they can use a dish or a plate. But I tell them they got to clean up afterwards. And I'm sure you know what happens. The students are ever so grateful for having a few cups or dishes that they can borrow to make their day happier. But when the bell rings, the students immediately rush out of the classroom door and they leave their dirty dishes behind. They have nary a thought about the used hot chocolate mugs that they left dirtied with their cocoa residue. And at a distance, the cup looks clean. I couldn't tell that they didn't do it. But upon closer examination, the mugs are dirty on the inside. The title of today's message is Inside the Cup. Inside the Cup. Let's turn to Matthew 23 and verse 25. Matthew 23 and verse 25. Christ is speaking. In fact, I'm just going to pull these a couple of verses out of here as he's giving a comeuppance or some correction to the Pharisees. And embedded in here is in verse 25 of chapter 23, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you cleanse the outside of the cup and the dish, but the inside are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first clean the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also." Well, we know a cup or a dish can look clean from the outside, but God looks on the inside to see whether that cup or dish is clean. You see, the outside of the cup in our lives is what everyone sees about us. We can appear to others to be doing what God wants. We can justify our actions by pointing out all the good works we're doing. But God, as we know, is omnipresent. He can see what we actually do and the reason that we actually do things, which is why we come before God daily to come clean with God, which is why we come to the New Testament Passover service each year to renew our covenant with God. And it's why we keep the Feast of Unleavened Bread to go through that renewal process, that cleansing process, and why we keep the Day of Atonement to become closer to God. Because it's not the outside of the cup that determines our character. It's the inside of the cup that determines what's in our heart. So how do you suppose I feel when an otherwise top-performing student with good grades leaves behind a dirty mug or a dirty dish? I think we all realize that teens all have different levels of maturity, and their consistent performance in grades doesn't always mean their consistency of performance in the consideration of other people. And sometimes their empathy might be lacking. I use these experiences with my teachers, with my students, these experiences as teachable moments. I don't condemn them forever for making a mistake. They're in the process of learning and growing. I give them an opportunity to clean the insides of their cup, even if it's later. Likewise, during the week of unleavened bread, we are to purge the leaven from our homes and property, because leaven represents sin for this week. But actual leavening is just the outside of the cup. The real spiritual leavening is inside the cup, where we really need to clean up our lives. We must exceed, then, the behavior by the Pharisees who cleaned up only the outside of the cup. We must exceed the behavior exhibited by those students who took minimal care of the ceramic mugs and dishes. We must clean not only the outside of the cups, but we must look in the inside of our cups, which is the practice of removing sin for our lives. There's a Bible example I want to turn to in 1 Samuel 15. We're given this example in 1 Samuel 15 about the King Saul, the first king of ancient Israel. And I'm going to paraphrase this in 1 Samuel 15. First of all, Samuel, God's prophet, tells King Saul in verse 1, Samuel said to Saul, "The Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people, over Israel." Now hear the voice of the words. And he goes on to say that, you know, repeating what God said, that he's going to punish Amalek for what they did with the children of Israel came out of Egypt. And so he said, "Saul, you and your army are to punish Amalek, and you're to destroy them and their livestock, everything, completely." And so as we read through 1 Samuel 15, verse 7, "And Saul attacked the Amalekites," and he goes on, but there's something that he didn't completely do. He didn't complete the instruction. He took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and then destroyed all the other people. And he also kept the best, in verse 9, of the sheep and the oxen, the fatlings and the lambs, all that he saw was good. Didn't want to destroy everything, but everything he didn't that didn't look good to him, he destroyed. Now, it's interesting, and I read one author who had an analysis on this, and he said that there could be a very good reason why God wanted to destroy them all, because of the transmission of disease among the people and among the animals and back and forth, and that rather than pollute the people of Israel coming out of Egypt, that everything should be destroyed. And of course, God is the master reviver, and he's in charge of the great white throne judgment. And so we know that when God makes a decision, it had to be for the betterment of those people ultimately. But we go back to the narrative here in chapter 1 Samuel 15. And if we take a look down to verse 17, "When you were little in your own eyes, were you not the head of the tribes of Israel? Did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, 'Go and destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they're consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord?" Notice in verse 20 what Saul responded then to Samuel. "But I have obeyed the voice of the Lord." How many of us have done that? But I have. I've done what you wanted me to do. And then we followed on with what Saul says. You know, I went on the mission. I did like you said. I only brought back Agag, the king, alive. Well, now, of course, for him to bring back the king is proof that he had the king of this other place in his power so that he could glorify himself as the one who utterly destroyed the other Amalekites. So that was his pride. That was a trophy that he could put up in the trophy case. And he said, and Saul goes on to say, "But the people took of the plunder, the sheep and the oxen and the best of the things, which should have been utterly destroyed. And they took it to sacrifice to God." In other words, well, maybe they didn't follow it exactly the way you wanted, but hey, it was for a good cause. They're going to sacrifice it to you. Following up then in verse 22, what Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great a delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice." Wow, right there. God said to do something, they did something else, and then they tried to cover it up with this saying, "But we were gonna sacrifice it." Really, we were, Scout's honor, we were gonna do that. That's why we kept all this good stuff. And we read on, "It's to obey is better than sacrifice, to heed than the fat of rams, for rebellion is as a sin of witchcraft, stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you've rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. You see, King Saul had a semblance of obedience, and he was instructed by God through Samuel. And in fact, King Saul did destroy the Amalekites and their livestock, but not quite all of them. He didn't finish the job. And this gave, of course, Saul gloating rights. Look who I conquered. And as King Saul was ready with the excuse when he was confronted by Samuel, but I was going to sacrifice the best of the livestock to God. Do we give similar excuses to God? Are we careful to wash the outside of the cup to make it look good to others? But do we wash the inside of the cup to be cleaned up in God's view? Let's take a look now at 2 Timothy in chapter 2 in verse 19. In 2 Timothy 2 in verse 19. Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having the seal. The Lord knows those who are his. Let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, and some for honor and dishonor. Therefore, if anyone cleanses himself from the latter, from the dishonor, he will be a vessel for honor, sanctified and useful for the master, prepared for every good work. This is really what God expects of us, is to be cleansed from every dishonor, to be prepared for every good work. If we read on, the expectations are laid out here in 2 Timothy. Flee youthful lust, pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace, with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. But avoid foolish and ignorant disputes, knowing that they generate strife. And a servant of the Lord must not quarrel, but be gentle to all, able to teach, patient, in humility correcting those who are in opposition, if God perhaps will grant them repentance, that they may know the truth, and that they may come to their senses and escape the snare of the devil, having been taken captive by him to do his will. Well, this week of Unleavened Bread, is our week to clean the leaven from our homes. The outside of the cup is when we're cleaning the leaven, but also then is to clean the sin out of our lives, which is the inside of the cup. Each day we partake of some unleavened bread as we're focusing our minds on cleaning the inside of the vessel that God has granted to us for this lifetime. So understanding why it's important to clean the inside of the cup, I would ask that your blessings be many and your trials be few as we look forward to this week of unleavened bread.